What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of Life in a Show podcast. On this one, I'll tell you, this podcast kind of came together because of an awesome conversation that I had with my good friend Dobbin Buck here. And I'm like, dude, we need to get this in the podcast. We have to share this with the world, because Dobbin is an incredible leader who has a lot of experience with people, with having successful teams, with inspiring folks, with also the, you know, how do you get your team to perform at their best while also, you know, connecting with them and, you know, helping them realize their potential. And Peter and I were discussing this as well. And we're like, guys, we got to just have a group discussion. So I'm excited for this episode, man.
So listen, be honest. I mean, was it really that you guys had this discussion, or you actually had a discussion about replacing your co-host and I just walked into it and you said, okay, let's record an episode?
Well, I mean, you're still here, dude, so don't worry about it.
Well, this might be my last one, I guess, right? I
mean, right. If this is the last episode you ever hear with Polish Peter, you'll know why.
Exactly, right. Well, yeah, I'm excited for Dobbin here because he's a leader and has got a lot of success in so many different areas of your life, especially business. And I think he runs and lives the life on their vision. So I'm excited for him on here.
Yeah, man. So Dobbin, tell me, you know, our discussion before we began recording was about, you know, dealing with the ups and downs of business and the role and the contributions that we can make as a leader in, you know, how do we steer the ship? How do we navigate some of these, you know, turbulent waters? How do we connect with people? How do we really kind of get the most out of our team? And what is an appropriate, you know, one of the questions specifically we asked was like, you know, should you be like friends with your employees? And by the way, I typically, you know, I say employees, but really like when I speak about Life in Arrow, like I call them team members, because I feel like that's much more a better description of what we all are trying to do. We're accomplishing a goal together. So why don't we start off with that? Like, how as a leader do you elevate yourself to the appropriate position of, like, you know, you have somebody who clearly, I feel like, somebody will work more for you and want to not let you down if they like you and if they have a connection with you. And I don't think you want to lead out of fear, but how do you, like, what is the appropriate level of connection that you feel like isn't too much? Because I've also seen this happen where, like, their bosses are best pals going out to at the bars and drinking beers after a day of work. And, like, now that respect seems to erode. Like, what do you think about that? What's your approach on that?
Absolutely. There's a lot there.
Yeah.
I will say that there was a period. So I grew up in the business world in a different generation. So I was under old guys with iron fists. So if I didn't get my behind handed to me two or three times a day, something was wrong because it was their nature. It was like my way or the highway, you know, and I grew up in that tense type of environment in my early days of business before I was really an entrepreneur, but, you know, working in the corporate landscape, we'll call it. And so as I progressed and became a business owner myself, I brought some of that with me. You know, we learn from our parents, you know, and part of our parents, you know, winds up being a part of how we operate with our children. You know, sometimes that's a good thing and sometimes that's not a good thing. Same thing in business. The leaders that I had that led up to a given point had influenced the way I was operating. And with my own company, we had monthly surveys that we would put out that were anonymous. Back then, they're no longer anonymous with my company, but they were anonymous. And so we would ask a series of questions that we could rank how people's experience with the company is, how they thought we were doing, where our future lied, all this stuff. And then there were like open fields for give notes and things like that, that you think would be useful for the leadership team. And not infrequently, there would be some commentary of, you know, I feel intimidated by Dobbin, you know. So intimidation was something that gave people discomfort. If they were being called to my office to meet with me, it was like, am I getting fired? What have I done wrong? Those were the thoughts that were going through their minds, making them anxious, even prior to me saying, hey, I heard you're interested in the Braves. I have a couple of tickets. Would you like that? You know, I could be asking them to come over for anything, but yet I had been projecting this image of intimidation. And it's not really who I am, but I can see very clearly in hindsight that the way I was communicating, the way I was leading was with a portion of that iron fist that I had been brought up in. I read a book, and this is many years ago. The book, of course, is still available, but called Drive. And it breaks down. Now we're dealing with Generation Z, but back then it was talking about the millennial landscape. You know, everybody was down on millennials. Now all the old people are millennials. So, right. You know, so one generation after another, but it's the same situation. It's a change of the guard, a change of the modalities and mindsets and what, you know, what younger people want. And as I got into this, I learned Daniel Pink is the author of Drive. And it really helped me to think through some things. And then around the same time, I went and took neuro-linguistic programming training from Richard Bandler. And so that really got me thinking at a whole new level about the power of communication and how I can impact people with a variety of different tools that those trainings provide. A lot of it is linguistic, right? Mm-hmm. And so I started testing on a daily basis. My own business was my laboratory on how to become non-intimidating, to be more motivating. And I also started applying some of these practices to business development and sales and how I communicated and brought people into a place of ease and to where they weren't, you know, intimidated or afraid of what I was, you know, my ideas or what I'm trying to sell, you know, to prospects or to business development relationships. So it's really interesting that, you know, I'm considered a pretty easygoing guy. Hopefully for most of my team or all of my team for that matter, that I'm a pleasure to work with. But there was a lot of work that went into that and being able to look at myself and saying, you know, how are people interpreting me? Because I do know this, that as a business owner, what I really want is the most optimal outcome for people's time. I want them to enjoy the workplace as much as possible. I don't want them to have anxiety and feel intimidation in the workplace. But we have, you know, we have goals for clients or initiatives that we're doing. And if we want to get the most out of people, and to be heard and to actually save ourselves time because we're not having to repeat ourselves because people have shut themselves down to what we're saying, right? They shut themselves up. They're like, fear mode. I'm not listening. You know, like our kids, I can't hear you. That happens to some level after you've just berated people forever. So it's about creating a respectful, thoughtful conversation between people that's bound in respect. And I'll say one more thing, and that sort of sets maybe the foundation. There are layers to relationships, and the layer that I always want to start on is whether it's a team member or anybody out in the world, the guy at the gas station, We are all human beings that have our own lives, our own families, our own friends. We have our own thing going on. No one person is any better than another. There's an illusion in the business world that the influencer or the CEO or the this or the that is somehow an elevated being. At the end of the day, you know, there is a place, there are roles that people have, you know, but at the end of the day, we all should be on an equal territory. Is my life any more important than anybody that works with me's life? Absolutely not. You know, is their life any more important than mine? Absolutely not. But it needs to be an equal playing field. So we're becoming this respect that says in the workplace and at Life and Air, we do this math on our calendars. But if you look at in the normal workplace, how many hours are they applying to serving our vision as leaders? When you do the math backwards to how much time are they spending with their kids and their spouse? How much time are they spending enjoying life, following their personal pursuits? Generally, the math equates to they're spending more time with our vision and their occupation than they are on the things that they love. Or that the reason why they're working to begin with, right? So when we look at it and we understand that level of sacrifice that is being given, and they may not even realize it because it's so normal to work your butt off. Mm-hmm. It's normalized, right? But if as leaders, we can look at it and say, holy cow, this person, you know, especially if they've been with us for years, of the years that they've worked with me, the majority of those hours, of those days, have been spent serving this company. And they probably are thinking about it when they go home. So I think about all this. So having a place to begin that, hey, I'm here to serve humans. I'm here to serve my team. I'm here to serve my clients. I'm here to serve the community. I'm here to serve the nation, the world, whatever, it keeps going. But, you know, the ripples start, you know, right there at equality.
Man, you know, something you said, like, really hit me is, like, and I want to dig a little more into, like, the fear and, you know, authoritative-based leadership versus, like, an encouraging, supportive, and we can talk about that for a second. But the first thing I really want to acknowledge, he said, is, like, you know, I think of your business produces a product, a service. But what if, in addition to the actual service itself that we are creating, we are also creating something else in these people's lives? And so you're married, like, to your point, you're marrying the two so that the service we're providing, and I'm using the word service as a general statement as to what the business produces. The service we're producing isn't just a widget or something to help people, but we're actually within the business itself providing a service to those people who can go out and serve their loved ones and their families and their friends, because now they are a representation of the culture that you have a hand in creating and allowing them to live that life and have it be part of something that they enjoy. Because, you know, to your point, like, and you've said this before on, I think on a previous episode, is like, you know, you mentioned again here now, is like, these people are spending more time with you than they are their own families. And so, like, we have, I think, an ethical obligation to really take that very seriously and honor that. And, you know, and it's not, we're not all just coming together necessarily for the sole purpose of, you know, at any cost producing X number of dollars of revenue or whatever it is. But, like, I feel like we can kind of merge or marry those two, in a way that can satisfy both.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, it's all strangely interconnected and, intricate in so many ways. And, you know, the key thing is, you know, nobody's perfect. And I certainly have my moments in behavior, you know, to where I go off the rails a little bit, but then, you know, I know enough to pull myself back in, you know, with situations that we're getting in. But it's sort of, I think everything in regards to, at least from my perspective, a successful business is, you know, is run on this understanding and respect. And, you know, the other thing I'll say about leaders that operate at a level of, you know, the iron fist or intimidation or barking orders and all, you know, the fact of the matter is that generally these types of individuals at some level don't really see themselves as a leader. You know, at some level they have feel that they have to, it's like someone that solves problems with fist fights. You know, as kids, they were the kids that could talk through things, and there are the kids that were going to throw a punch. You know, it's, why are they throwing a punch? Because they have no options. They have no skills. They have no grasp of the bigger picture. That's all that's left. And that's, I think, with leaders is like their creativity on how to comfort people or motivate people runs out. They get frustrated. They're really frustrated about their own limitations as a leader. And then they lash out.
Well, we have, you know, we have historical emperors like this, right? That would just, you disagree with me, you're getting beheaded. Meanwhile, you have other people, and I'm reading Meditations right now by Marcus Aurelius, and like, you know, and they're very different perspective of, you know, how do you really communicate with people? And, you know, there's tyrants, and then there's, and then there's people we look back to with great admiration and respect, and like, and that's a glow. It's a much higher, I guess you could say, elevated status of, you know, being emperor of Rome, for instance. But like, you know, you're the emperor of your business of sorts, and like, and I don't know if you have a successful business if you make a lot of money and produce a lot of widgets and help a lot of people, yet everyone in your company hates being there. You know, so yeah. I totally agree with you, man. It feels like it's they just don't have the skill set, or they haven't developed the skill set yet. Do you think that anybody can develop into being a good leader?
I believe that that's a yes and no answer. I have seen people develop into great leaders. I like to think that myself, I have improved as a leader over the last 20 years, and I can see milestones in my behavior and my ability to adapt and work with people to improve. I have seen individuals, and I'm not trying to be critical or judgmental of anybody, but I have seen individuals maybe that just psychologically did not have the ability to look hard enough at themselves to go into that sometimes frightening territory and to be able to incur that type of change. So is everybody capable? In my opinion, yes. Is everybody willing to go into that vulnerability and really assess themselves and take a good hard look at who and what they are? Unfortunately, no.
Hey, we'll get right back to the episode, but before we do, I want to tell you about something really special. We have an upcoming Business Builder Workshop in Raleigh, North Carolina, my hometown, from November 13th to the 15th. It's a three-day event. It's essentially a three-day MBA. We've actually had people say, I've learned more from 3 days with you guys than I have in 2 years of business school. We unpack from A to Z what it takes to be successful in business from a, not a, a high level, an armchair, a theoretical approach, but a proven practical in the trenches approach. We talk about sales, we talk about marketing, we talk about business development, we talk about outsourcing, automation, delegation, like managing your money, making sure you have everything in place. Like it's awesome, dude. Peter co-facilitates these with me. Peter, what would you say to somebody who's thinking about coming out to Business Builder?
Well, if you want to have a business that supports your life, not the other way around, this is the place where we actually sit down and for 3 days create a business that basically supports your life. So you can go on vacations, you can spend time with the family, you can actually do what you were sending out to do. So we'd love to see you there and get dig deep into the business and see how it can help you.
And I'll also say this, you know, for those of you who are skeptical, and I realize 3 days is a long time to ask, we have a 100% money back guarantee. You come to the entire event. Not the first half of the first day where, you know, you may stay there because you're afraid we're going to cover something good on the second day. Come to the full 3 days. And if it's not worth every single penny you paid to be there, we will gladly refund all of that money right there and then to you. We've never had a single person ask for that back, though, just for your information. So, again, November 13th through 15th, the Lifefinier Business Builder Workshop. Go to lifefinier.com and register now. Let's get back to the episode.
Right. It's not an easy conversation to have with themselves because they're going to have to admit that they're not that great of a leader, or they are, you know, like I remember back in the day when I was an architect, the company I worked for, the boss was, I don't know if you ever seen the movie, I think it's The Office, right? remember that? And the boss would come
office
in the
Space.
Yeah. What was the Office Space? Well, whatever. It's a movie, right?
Yeah.
Ironically, my name was Peter. So I literally had the boss who would come in there, hey, Peter, I'm going to need you to go ahead and blah, 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 right? And whenever there was a problem with some kind of a, with any buildings that we're doing, right? He would come in and said, we have a problem. There was some kind of a, something that bad happened, right? Like some kaboom happened, whatever, with that building, right? Like there was a error, there was a mistake. He would say, we have a problem. And the way it looked like to me and employees in the company is like, okay, I screwed up. I made a mistake. Bad me. It wasn't the boss. So my question to you is, because one of the things that I'm hearing from you is being a leader, it includes being a servant. And I'm curious as far as like going from the perspective of like who screws things up and how does that, does the leader own the entire responsibility for what's happening in a company, or how does that communication work, would you say, effectively?
My perspective is that at some level, it always, you know, it always comes back to the leader. I mean, at a certain level, do people make mistakes? Yes. Do people in the workplace maliciously and nefariously do things to hurt companies or whatever as an extreme? Sure, it happens. Because they aren't happy with their lives, because they aren't happy with the workplace, because they're acting out or whatever the reason is. So all sorts of different things occur. But I think that everything really boils down to leadership, because leadership sets forth the protocols for hiring. So being able to identify the people with the proper mindset and capabilities to actually be able to successfully fulfill a role, identifying them, their ability to cultivate those people's skill sets and crafts through ongoing education and growth, to where people want to always feel like they're growing and they want to feel like they're contributing. And if you take away either of those things, you're going to hit stagnancy. When you hit stagnancy, then you hit, you know, emotional reaction periods over, you know, over a period of time. And some people may break down in a couple months at a certain point, or it may take them years, but it's coming, you know? So there's, I think that it always, at some level, falls down to leadership. If someone's not a right fit or it's not working, it's the leader's intuition or understanding to either help them, or if it's a case that this just isn't a good fit, to say, hey, how can I support you on your path outside of this company? You know, so there are hard decisions to be made. And when I say about respect and communications and all, it doesn't mean that everything has to be soft and gentle without a outcome, you know, without a positive outcome. Sometimes we have to get into serious conversations. They're very real. They aren't easy. But when someone knows that you're coming from a place of servitude and ideally from a place of experience that you can impart some wisdom, then it'll be better received than all of a sudden some crazy leader has a moment of clarity and starts dumping some wisdom on somebody. And they're like, oh, well, you know, after 3 years of getting yelled at, this person's trying to get me to believe that they actually care about me or something like that. You know, it's strange. Yeah. There's a consistency and there's a word that I really love. It's called equanimity. And
I can't even say that word.
Yeah. Well, work on it. Google it. And there's a little thing you can push a speaker and it'll say it over.
Thank
and
you,
over
Dobbin.
Again.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yes.
But you know, that in my emotional, the way that I connect emotionally is like, I'm not super excited, even on the positive end of things. And I'm not super angry on the negative end of it, things. I'm really consistent in the way that I'm delivering information. It's designed to become from like a place of stillness or, you know, a place of consistency. So, you know, I may get a little happy or laugh at something, you know, I go to here, or maybe when I'm upset about something, I go to here, but I'm not going to extremes as a leader in front of people emotionally. And so they know what to expect when they come in with me, you know, when they come in and we're interacting with one another, if there's an issue or they're having an issue, you know, they know that I can be a voice of reason and compassion. And, but also, you mentioned Wojo early on, you know, are you buddies with everybody or whatever? I'm friends with my employees, but there's a, there are barriers to that, that both protect them and protect myself, in regards to interpersonal relationships and how deep we are. You know, there are people that I've been with for, you know, 14, 15 years, and team members, and I absolutely adore them. I just love them, and I'm grateful they have contributed to my life in ways that I could never repay, you know?
I love that.
But at the same time, I have a role, and so I do not go outside of my role in the way that I conduct myself. I don't go into inappropriate zones with client, with team members in conversation, you know, lascivious or nefarious content, things like that. I keep it all, not that I do that in my personal life either, mind you, but, you know, I'm just very careful about what I'm discussing. And because I'm the one that's responsible for how that plays out, how that relationship grows. So I have to put rails on it to make sure that it is in the best interest of the company and in the best interest of us interpersonally for a long, healthy working relationship.
Yeah, I love that. So listen, so far what I'm hearing from you is being a leader for the company is a lot of it is the way you are being in the company, like being a servant, being a respected, you know, being, you know, those kinds of ways of being. And I'm hearing what's the undertone on it is that if you want that from your employees, you need to put that out first. You need to show up that way in a company. Like if you want respect, there needs to be some respect coming from you, if I'm not mistaken. I think that's what I'm hearing. They also talked about cultivating the culture in a company of growth, cultivating contribution, those kinds of things. So can you give us maybe two, three different, I don't know, call it the strategies of how you have done in your company to create that as a leader, to create that sense of growth in your employees and contribution so they work for you, so they do the great job and they stay with you for a long time, because obviously they have.
Well, one thing is, so sometimes companies fall into a situation to where it's like, And we have like employee of the month and things like that, to where we recognize excellence. So we have programmatically some things that we do to draw attention to excellent service, or, you know, however people are operating within the organization. But my wife is like really masterful. Elizabeth is so masterful, and it's not just her, but her and her extended teams that are around her, that they really, it's interesting. First of all, they look at error or failures as an opportunity for growth. So maybe in John Maxwell, we've heard about failing forward in his books, and a lot of other books for that matter, but they literally take time to stop, analyze what didn't work. They don't point blame like, oh, you screwed that up, but let's analyze it. It's not like that. It's like, okay, there's a reason why this didn't unfold as was ideal. Let's break it down and figure out what contributed to this employee's misunderstanding of the goal, because they might not have been armed with all the information they needed to be successful. Let's look at the whole picture here really quick and then adjust our systems to accommodate that. So I'm speaking ambiguously because my business might be different than the 100 other businesses that listen to this. But the other thing is to have a culture of not waiting to the end of the month for an employee of the month. Only one person wants employee of the month to credit people for their hard work. It's also in analyzing our faults or where we've fallen short and modifying on a daily basis. That way we have a culture that doesn't point blame and say, this is screwed up because you did it wrong, you know, or something like that. Does that motivate someone to do better? No, it makes someone feel weaker and like question their own capacity for being successful. So we want to be a team. We lock arms and we fail together, and we rise together, and we celebrate together. So part of the language as a leader, and it doesn't need to be to ridiculous extents, but part of the language is, you know what, Peter, you know, you consistently really do a good job at this. Like, I appreciate the way you communicate. And especially today, I really like this. You know, you take those two sentences, throw it down, and just let someone know that you recognize that something that they've done has impacted you, or that you've seen their genius or their efforts as a value. It goes a long way. And so many people don't just take the time to stop and say, you know, Wojo, man, what you shared with me today really resonated in a deep way with me. Got me thinking about a lot of certain things, and I just appreciate it. I appreciate you opening up and sharing that with me, you know, and this could be about, wow, you know, you really consistently, always the paper you wrap around hamburgers at our Burger King franchise is consistent. It's perfect. It's, you know, I mean, it could be down to anything, but you can always find something good about what someone is doing. And people forget to do that. And so when we say people want to feel as though they're contributing, how do they know they're contributing? Because they need a feedback loop to show that someone appreciates their contribution, you know? And that needs to not be instilled into awards or Amazon gift cards, but into the common language and culture of the teams.
Yeah, I love that, man. I think that's a really good idea because of the fact that, it sounds to me like it doesn't matter if you are an owner of a 50 plus company or 100 plus employee company, or you have two people, or even you just have some contractors that work for you, right? That they're not actual employees. So I got a question for you. You've been in the business for a very long time. You have a very successful company. You've probably had a lot of, you know, successes and failures and all kinds of different things. What's one thing that you've learned maybe earlier in your career that helped you level up as far as a leader in the business and in your life that you carried on from that point on? Like, what was that thing that helped you create a better leader, be a better leader?
I think that one thing that has contributed to that is sort of, strangely enough, maybe goes back to personal branding. So we are who we are, but when we're in different places and we're in different roles, we, you know, perhaps modify our outfit or our character, you know, to serve that specific function. You know, when I'm speaking from stage somewhere, there is a character that comes out in me. When I'm in a business development meeting, there's another version of that character that comes out of me. When I'm meeting with my team, there's another version of me that comes out. And it's not like it's acting or it's fraudulent or inauthentic, but it's a version of myself that serves that particular function. And so it's like learning to be a bit of a chameleon to bring comfort and to elicit trust in the people that I'm engaging. And for different audiences, it's a little different version of the same being. I learned from my dad. I worked with him for years, and he was the Iron Fist, but he was also a master of relationships, and people loved him. He did big business deals. I watched him. I listened to him. I idolized him. Like, I wanted to be him. And for all practical purposes, aspects of myself are like him. And I'm grateful for that. But I sort of watched the way he juxtaposed his character in different situations. And fortunately, I was able to recognize this at a young age. And, you know, like, I saw it because I knew him at home, you know. I knew him at home, and I knew that guy that was in that meeting was not the dude I sit at the dinner table with, right? Yeah.
Right.
And so it's really fascinating. So what has helped me as a leader is more relational, and it's helped me in business development and everything. People are like, hey, Dobbin, you live in the backwoods of North Georgia. How is it you know all these, you know, amazing people? How are you friends with Peter and Wojo, and like, how did you meet them? You know? And I'm like, well, the universe brought us together, but the universe and something greater than myself, that I believe brings everybody together. I think there's a synchronicity and a plan in everything. It's orderly. It seems chaotic, but there's order to it. But it's that there was something in my character that attracted you guys to want to perpetuate a relationship, right? And so when I was in that role, when I was meeting with you, something, and vice versa, it works both ways. Like, I saw something when I initially met Wojo. It's like, hey, man, what a cool dude. Man, what a...
Really?
What a
you said, what a cool dude?
What a cool dude, you know? What a peaceful warrior, you know, whatever, you know, like, I like this guy's vibe. He's not all in my face and, you know, espousing, you know, like, we're just two guys jamming and having a good time about it, you know, and it's meaningful. So it's like, for leadership, it's sort of like that. It's like developing our, I said personal brand before, but it's more like developing our charisma and our character to serve relationships. It goes a long way. I came from a sales background too, so this is why I may be a little bit more heavy-handed on this sort of stuff. But I think that it's played a role in me being able to interact with other stakeholders, partners in business with me, long-term, to traverse difficult territory, explosions, financial failures and everything. It's that trying to equanimity, staying in at a certain consistent level. Have I ever flown off the handle? believe me, there are plenty of people that have witnessed it, but it's, as I get older, it's less and less common. And it was very common when I was in my younger years and my, you know, late 20s, early 30s, like, you know, I was a fireball. But I don't know if I answered your question. I digress, and I will wind up on the other side of the universe from a question.
Well, I think one thing that I got out of this, yeah, I'll appreciate your answer, because I think one thing that I got out of this, getting to really know yourself at the personal brand level, right? And once you get to know yourself, it's about learning about other people, being curious about other people. When you're on a stage, whether you're with the employees or you're with someone else, like learning about them helps you to connect with them a lot more. Not from the perspective of you are, you know, just being like a people pleaser, but from the perspective of you being, how can I lead those people, right? How can I lead, you know, this person who is very timid versus this person who's on fire constantly, right? And being able to learn about that helps you become, I think, better leader. And I think that's what I got out of your conversation.
Yeah, I mean, we got to wrap it, but like, you know, there's a lot in here, and I'd encourage you guys to go back and listen to this again, because a few things, like as you guys are talking, like so many things are coming to mind, but like I just want to try to summarize some of the main points that I heard. And you mentioned the word, you know, brand, but really it's your character. And you can't sustainably be the kind of leader that, you know, is encouraging and is positive and does acknowledge people and does all the right things unless you are the kind of person internally who is that person. Like, it's not, this isn't a tactic. Like, this isn't like, oh, I'm going to get my toolbox of how to lead people. If inside there's things that are broken in a major way, and that you view, for instance, if you view people as like cogs in the wheel of your business, and you ask them, like, and you try to be friendly and buddy up with them and try to show them you care, but it's not authentic, it's not going to work. So, you know, I think of Stephen Covey talking about like character first versus an over tactic. And so really it is that transformation of you first that has to occur for you to ever have a chance of developing into a leader who can really genuinely impact people and create awesome things. You know, and the other thing is like, we talked about this early on, is like a successful business, I think, is really one that where people want to be. They are acknowledged. They are feeling like they're contributing to people, to a cause bigger than themselves. They're being seen for not only who they are as a person, because it's not just all 100% about output. It's about who they are as a person. And sometimes, by the way, in output, this gets a little bit ambiguous, but like sometimes, like maybe you have somebody that makes the rest of the team better too. And so like, so you got to kind of like nourish and nurture this in a way. And I love, and to Dobbin's point, I love how you used examples of how you operationalize this and like how we show this and how, you know, what you think of and the intentionality of how you respond to people and when things happen, taking a step back and whether it's good or bad and maintaining that boundary of like, you know, and of making sure this is going to convey what I really want it to convey and not something that is going to hurt the team or hurt this person or hurt the company. And so there's a lot of, and I know, listen, by the way, there's been hundreds, if not thousands, of books written on leadership, and we're talking about, you know, a half hour podcast here. So I know we're not going to solve, you know, world hunger here, but hopefully, listen, if you're a viewer listening right now and you got one or two nuggets from this, like that is how this works. Like, you know, before we started recording, I was telling Dobbin about some recent things that I've learned about, you know, how I operate as a leader, and it's a constant journey. And as you kind of go, I kind of look at it as like you're walking down this path and you're picking up these little tips, these little rocks, these pebbles, these seeds that you can implement into your own leadership journey. And I don't think there is one exact leadership style that's perfect. Certainly, I think there are general guardrails of like, here's some things that typically work better than others. Like, so for instance, like fear and punishment probably isn't the most ideal way to run a company. And, you know, and so there's things like that as well. So like, dude, I'm very thankful for your time, Dobbin, and for sharing all these nuggets, man. Yeah, Peter, you got something?
No, I would second that, man. Your wisdom always comes in. Every single time I talk to you, there is some kind of wisdom that I get from you. So I really appreciate it. And hopefully, no, I was talking about Dobbin, dude.
Oh,
your lost cause. I mean, the fact that, you know, you're for entertainment, and it's for my own entertainment.
Like a dancing monkey.
Yeah.
Oh, so. Awesome. Yeah,
thanks for having me on, guys. It's really an honor and just a joy. And like everybody, I'm a student. You know, I'm always learning. I'm always trying to figure out, you know, find my way through this thing. And it's just a pleasure to jam with true players like yourselves.
Awesome. Always a pleasure, my friend. Listen, if you guys enjoyed this, give it a thumbs up. Give us a rating. Let us know we're on the right track. Share it with somebody who you think needs to hear this kind of thing for themselves, for their own leadership journey. We'll see you next week, everyone. Take care.